I welcome you with all my heart. This body does not presume that it has anything new to teach you. I will refer to this body as I. Let's make it short. I have nothing new to tell you. I am not a philosopher. I am not a preacher. I am not worthy. I simply have a confession. I confess to you your own reality. It is not a teaching, it's a confession. I am speaking to myself, confessing. And you are myself. You are Satchitananda, knowledge, existence, and bliss. You are not the body or the mind. What you appear to be is not the truth. It may be a fact, but it is not the truth. A fact is something that appears to be true, but it changes. You cannot be who you think you are, for when you were a baby, you were quite different. And when you were a little boy or a little girl, you were also different. And the way you are now is completely different than you were before. Consequently, how can you be the body? What are you? Who are you? Satchitananda? What's that? Even if I tell you this, it means absolutely nothing. You must have your own experience. You mustn't believe a word I say. Why should you believe me? What do I know? I am simply confessing to you that there is only power Brahman, consciousness, bliss, being, awareness, pure intelligence. This has been my experience. There is nothing else. Everything else is an experience of the mind. An appearance, like hypnosis. The world seems real. So does a dream. What is this world? It's as if you just woke up from your dream, and you still remember the dream. In the dream you were going places, getting married, having children, getting older. Then you wake up and you halfway remember the dream and halfway remember the world in which you wake up. So which one is real? The world or the dream? And it's been my experience, they're both alike. There's no real difference. You attach yourself to this world in the same way you attach yourself in your dream. If you were dreaming and you dreamt you were falling off a mountain and I was falling beside you, and I said to you, don't worry, nothing can happen to you, you're dreaming, you wouldn't believe me. You would be filled with fear. And you would say, can't you see we're falling? Can't you see what's happening? How can you tell me I'm dreaming? Just before you hit the ground, you wake up. And you laugh. It was all a dream. In the same way, you have attached yourself to sickness, to health, to good, to bad, to happiness, to unhappiness. These are all concepts. You attach yourself to person, place, and thing. You have forgotten that this is a dream. You believe it's real. And because you believe it's real, you suffer accordingly. When you leave your body, you will have to come back again and again and again. All part of the dream. Until you become detached. How do you do that? By simply observing what's going on around you and then attaching yourself to it. By being awake to your reality. Understanding yourself that you are not the doer. Everything that you do has been preordained. It will be done. You have to let go mentally of all conditioning, all objectivity. And you must still your mind. Make your mind placid, like a motionless lake. Then reality comes of its own accord. Happiness comes of its own accord. Peace comes of its own accord. Love comes of its own accord. Freedom comes of its own accord. These things are synonymous. They happen without you ever thinking about them. But first you must get rid of the notion that I am the body. Or mind, or the doer, and then everything will happen by itself. Be still and know that I am God. There was once a girl who was born into a house of prostitution. And across the street, in front of the marketplace, there was a preacher, a holy man. He used to exclaim the virtues of God and talk about the house of prostitution, how it was filled with sinners. And he told people to repent. Yet the girl who grew up in the house of prostitution was 23 years old. Used to look out the window every day and cry to herself. And she would say, how I wish I was like that holy man. How I wish I was spiritual. And she would imagine in her mind that she was a holy person. And yet go on with her work. Now they both got old and died. And went to St. Peter to go on to heaven. St. Peter told the man, you can't come in, you've got to go to hell. And he told the girl, you can come in. So the holy man became dumbfounded. He said, why? All these years I proclaimed your goodness and your virtues. I told people to repent. How can you let her in? She was a prostitute. And leave me out. And St. Peter said, you've been a hypocrite. You were very worthy and talked a lot and said nothing. In your heart you thought everybody was a sinner but you. Whereas the girl, in her imagination and her feelings, always was thinking of God. So she can come and you can't. The point is this. It's not what you say. It's not what you proclaim. It's what's deep, deep, deep in your heart that determines what happens to you. It's not reading books. It's not studying. It's not going to classes. It's sitting by yourself, becoming quiet, going deeper and deeper within yourself, transcending your mind and your body, until something happens. When thoughts come to you, you simply ask yourself, to whom do these thoughts come? From whence cometh these thoughts? Follow the thoughts to your source. Find out the source of your thoughts. You will find that the source of your thoughts is I. Follow the I thread to its source by asking, who am I? Or what is the source of I? Where did this I come from? You will realize that the pronoun I was the first word that was ever spoken. And everything else is attached to I. Every other word, every other thought, every other feeling, every other emotion, they're all attached to the I. I feel happy, I feel sad, I feel sick, I feel well, I feel poor, I feel rich. Everything is attached to I. If the I becomes dissolved, so does everything else, and you become free. Find out for whom there is an I, and you will discover something amazing. You will discover that I never existed. There never was an I. You will discover that you never existed. There's no such thing as you. You will discover that you are the imperishable self. That you were never born and you can never die. You will discover that you are omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent. That there are no others. There's no world. There's no universe. There's no God. There's only the Self. All this is the Self. All that you behold is the Self. And I am is that. This will give you a feeling of freedom. Of bliss, of happiness. You will not lose your awareness. When I speak these things, people believe they become completely annihilated and there's nothing left. They melt into the great ocean of nirvana. This is not necessarily true. You will always be awareness. You will always be pure intelligence. For that is your real nature. You will always be blissful. Except you will understand that you are not who you appear to be. Your body will still appear to be doing things, going through its motions. You will appear to be an ordinary person, but you will know. You have lifted yourself up above the gross world into the heavenly world of pure consciousness, and you will be at peace. Any questions about that? Feel free to say anything you want.
All right, Robert, I've been thinking about the practice of the teachings in the world, in daily life. And I was mulling over this recent business of the problem of the two Christian scientists in Boston, whose child had died. I don't know if you're aware of that. This was in the news recently. And, of course, there's strong similarities between the teaching and Christian science. And, of course, these parents believed that their illness was error. They wanted to project only health, only divine health, divine reality, which was all that existed, according to the teaching, whether it's Christian science or Buddhist teaching or whatever. And so they refused to acknowledge that the child was sick. So, what do you have to say about something of that sort, where you want very much to believe that you are projecting a different reality, the true reality, or not?
This has nothing to do with the belief system. You have to understand what's going on and where you are. If you're sick, you see a doctor. If you're hungry, you eat. If you're in the sun burning up, you get out of the sun. It's not a belief. This is why I tell you to believe nothing. Do not believe what I say. Do not believe anything. Christian science unfortunately believes you shouldn't go to doctors, even if you're sick. But they have a belief system. A belief system doesn't make itself. You have to have a consciousness of the truth. That's why there are some Christian scientists who do not go to doctors and it works. But most of them who do not go to doctors die because they're not high enough. You can't just accept the system and say this is the way it is mentally. You have to become a living embodiment of the teaching. And then it works. In other words, you can't join the Christian Science Church and never go to a doctor again. You have to work on yourself. You have to do certain things within your own consciousness until you lift yourself up and out of the ordinary human error. Then things begin to happen. But of course, what I'm saying to you is go beyond sickness and health, beyond poverty and riches, beyond good and bad. We're not trying to exchange bad for good. They're two sides of the same coin. We are trying to get off the wheel, to become completely, totally free of human good and human bad. It's a completely different dimension. If you exchange bad for good, you will have to exchange good for bad. For we live in a world of duality. For every good there's a bad, for every bad there's a good. For every up, there's a down. For every amount of pressure pushing this way, an equal amount of pressure pushes the other way. Like in the flying of jet planes. Without pressure, the plane couldn't fly. Without resistance. This is the world in which we live. I am talking about transcending the world. Going beyond the limitations of this world. Becoming pure bliss, pure consciousness, while embodied. Completely different. You follow?
Did we tell you?
said something which I wish you could elaborate a little bit more. I think it's beautiful. You said the only choice you have is to arrive or not to arrive in yourself.
Oh, I was referring to everything that's happened to you in this life has been preordained. You're not as free as you believe. Every hair on your head is counted. Every move you make. If I move my finger like this, it has all been preordained.
What is the source of it? Why did it begin?
It didn't. It never began. It's hypnotism.
It.
No one.
Not yourself. Not
no.
Capital S.
No. It's hypnosis. I always use the example, the sky is blue. There's really no sky, and there's no blue. If you fly up, there's only space. But we see the sky is blue. If you're in the desert, you see an optical illusion, you see water. And you chase the water, it's a mirage. It doesn't exist. Same thing.
The mind that has to believe it has a source.
The mind.
That's projecting that upon itself.
When the mind goes, all those concepts disappear with it.
Those concepts also.
So what I was referring to, the only freedom the mind has, and this has to do with the mind, is to turn within and find the source.
It's almost like connecting to the same circuit. Just freeing it.
Yes. You have to use your mind to destroy your mind. The mind is nothing but a bunch of concepts. All the mind is a bunch of thoughts of the past and the future. If you understand that everything is preordained, you have nothing to worry about.
Is that also that you can say? Have an attitude of what they have for your
day. No, that's not good. I'm glad you brought it up. You have to act as if nothing is for your day.
Even though it is.
Even though it is. Due to the fact it will give people a license to do whatever they like. The average person should never hear anything like this. Where they will go out and do all kinds of strange things. So we say, your life is preordained, but don't just sit back and say, it's going to happen anyway. Act as if it's not. Act as if you're free. But realize it's preordained. And everything will take care of itself.
Ultimately,
you lost it. Yes. Your real nature is freedom.
But we have all those stopping points in between, and that's where
it is your mind. So it all comes from the mind. All creation exists in the mind. Your universe, which you see and feel, extends out of your mind. You create your own universe every day. The way you see things with your eyes and your senses. It's an extension of your mind. When you pull in your mind and rest your mind in your heart, you're in a completely different universe.
You don't need a mantra
to do that. No. Just awareness. It's a waking up process.
When you meditate, there's so many things on meditation, contemplation, concentration, and so on, that recently I've even been, so I'll go in, I'll start with this mantra, and then I'll go to that mantra, and go, no, this is, I mean, not just thoughts, I'm having different mantras, so it's very dizzy, and but then there's the idea of blankness, and we don't want blankness necessarily either, it's not just a void, it's
There's no such thing as avoid.
There's still awareness, even though
it's... There is pure intelligence. Absolute reality. But that's ineffable. You can't explain that. You have to experience it for yourself. What we call the void in Buddhism is pure awareness. It's not really a void. The reason it's called a void, it means it transcends the world. It's beyond anything you know. So it's a void as far as that's concerned. But it's really pure awareness.
So, that you have in meditation, you have no experience, means nothing.
Absolutely nothing. Physics matter. Experiences are not reality.
I'm saying this because I'm wanting confirmation of feelings I've already had. You've confirmed many thoughts.
All forms of meditation, affirmations, yoga, breathing exercises, are all to make the mind stop, to still the mind, to make the mind quiescent. And that's going about it the hard way. The fastest way to do this is to ask yourself the question, to whom comes these thoughts? As I mentioned before, you must use your mind to annihilate your mind. And by asking the question, to whom do these thoughts come, but not answering, it will take care of itself.
Do not answer.
Do not answer. Due to the fact when you answer, it's your ego answering. Your ego seems to have all the right answers. And you never get anywhere. You do not answer. But the feeling will come to you. These thoughts come to me. I feel these thoughts. And the next query should be, from where does the I come from? Or who am I? And again, you do not answer. And one day you will find out that the eye does not come from anything. It's mesmerism. There is no eye. There never was an eye. There is only I am. Freedom, bliss, consciousness, existence. They're all synonymous. And you will feel yourself not as a body, but as omnipresence. You will realize everything is yourself. There's only one. And even the one does not exist. There is no word to use. There is the self. That's the only word you can use. Everything is the self. And you are that. When you use words, it spoils it. It's beyond words, beyond thoughts. It comes to you. It's like you wake up, it's like you've been asleep for all these years. And all of a sudden you awaken. And you know. It's like the story of the Buddha. He was sitting on the boat tree for 30 days. And he made up his mind he was going to sit there until he dies. Until he awakens. And his disciples were sitting all around him watching. On about the 30th day he opened his eyes and he was shining and he was smiling. His disciples asked him, Master, what happened to you? Did you see God? He said, no. Did you become self-realized? No. Well, what happened? And he simply exclaimed, I am awake. Therefore, all these words, self-realization, illumination, awareness, they're just words. You just wake up from the dream. Right now you feel your body. You feel your emotions. You feel pain. You feel hurt. You feel all kinds of things going on in this world. You watch TV, you watch the news, and you get upset. All these terrible things, these dastardly things that are taking place in the world. But when you wake up, all these feelings are gone. You realize the illusion, the dream, and you are no longer that.
Do you behave then differently in the world? Do things that used to interest you no longer interest you?
In a way that can be true. But in a way you can still be doing the same things, except you're no longer attached to them. As an example, if you have a good job, you're the president of a bank, or if you're a garbage man, it doesn't make any difference. You will do your duty, whatever you have to do, better than you ever did it before. You will no longer look at time. You will no longer think that you're the doer. You will just do whatever has to be done. Whatever your body is supposed to do will be done. Your body is under the law of karma. And whatever you have to do, you will do. But you will have no attachment. You will have compassion. You will have love. You will have loving kindness and mercy. But no attachment.
Is it just happen like that?
Yes.
So we're not in process of
that? No. It appears that you're in the process.
Yes, that's what I think. Well, I feel like I know more now, or I know now that I don't know. How do I say this?
The process is an appearance.
Couldn't you say this is a necessary preliminary state, though?
No.
So somebody working at the car wash down here could all of a sudden just...
Yes.
You wouldn't be going through any of the,
exactly.
the gymnastics.
Exactly.
We would be going through.
Some people call this God's grace, but there's more to it than that. You had to be in this thing in a previous life. You did your sadhana, you did your spiritual exercise, these spiritual practices in a previous existence, and you're now waking up.
That makes it sound like process.
That's how it appears. That's the appearance.
Wouldn't that be true of the fellow at the car wash too? If he'd done something in previous lives, and while he's washing cars, suddenly he woke up?
Yes. That's all an appearance. You're speaking of the appearance world. In reality, nobody's ever done anything. And nobody's ever become deluded. Everyone's already free. Identify with your freedom. Identify with the ultimate reality. Do not identify with the experiences you're going through bodily. Let them alone. Leave them be. Do whatever you have to take care of them. But do not put your mind to that. Keep your mind on your freedom. On your absolute reality. And then you will see what happens.
What exactly does
that mean, or Ramana, mean
when you said the mind falls into the heart, the mind rests in the heart,
the head in the heart? The heart is referring to his absolute reality. pure intelligence. The mind has come out of the heart and does all its damage by making you believe you're worthy. When you go back again, the mind goes back into the heart, the absolute reality from which it came, because it never really existed. And the absolute reality shines forth once again in all its glory and splendor. It's like the sun in the clouds. When the clouds cover the sun, the ignorant person says there's no sun. He or she does not realize that the sun is always shining, but the clouds are not covering the sun. And once the clouds dissipate, the sun is shining once again. So it is with us. We appear to have troubles and problems and all kinds of nonsense going on in our lives. Those are clouds. But your true self is trying to shine. You will not let it, because you imagine your problems are real. You identify with the evil, with the negativity. You identify with the wrong conditioning. So you keep the clouds from dissipating. As soon as you turn from your problems and turn towards the light, the clouds of your problems will dissipate once again, and your heart or your sun will shine through, and everything will be resolved.
How does that relate to the physical part of your dimension?
No.
Remind you to say
you. Yes. People always want to know where the absolute reality is. So we gave them a place on the right side of the chest to focus over there. In other words, people ask them for a process. Ramana, where should I meditate? On what part of my body? So we realized they wouldn't understand anything else. Well, okay, meditate on the right side of your chest. That's where your spiritual heart is. See reality there. Go, jump into the right side. That's where it's at. He wasn't speaking literally. He was just giving people a place to go, because they couldn't comprehend absolute reality.
Established in absolute consciousness and to be established in samadhi, it seems to be based on absolute faith that we're not a person, that we are consciousness.
On the contrary, faith has nothing to do with it.
I mean, trust in the divine rather than trust in me as a human. Trust to be able to release into samadhi. You know?
Remember, the person who wants to trust is the ego. So you don't want to do any of those things. You just want to awaken. And you don't even want to do that. Just be yourself. Be yourself. Ask yourself, who wants to trust? Who wants to awaken? And you will see it's all your ego. It's I. I want to do this. I want to do that. I want an experience. I want this. All that has to go. When all that is gone, the sun will shine by itself. And the way you get rid of these things is by asking, from whence do they come? From whence do they come? In other words, where does the idea that I have to trust some power come from? It comes from me. I believe that. Who am I? Who is that? Just observe your thoughts. Do not try to change them. Do not try to correct them. Just observe them. And you can ask yourself, from whom do these thoughts come? Or you can just witness your thoughts without asking anything. And the process will take care of itself. You will know what to do. What we use here sometime, which is a very good beginning, is the I Am meditation. You relax your body, and you inhale and you say I, and you exhale and you say Am. I Am. You can do this while you're waking, while you're walking, while you're washing dishes, while you're resting. What it does, it makes your mind one-pointed, so it'll stop thinking. In other words, you use whatever method you have to still your mind. The whole secret is to quiet your mind, to keep it from thinking, to keep it from being active. Your mind is a bunch of waves. You want to stop the waves. And you want your mind to become still. And the fastest way to do that is by self-inquiry or by observing your thoughts, watching your thoughts, becoming the witness to your thoughts.
I was in a group where they just say, you know, observe. Are you familiar with Maurice McCall?
No.
What's that?
Maurice McCall, he wrote commentary on teachings of Gurdjieff and Upstate.
Oh.
And he talks about your self observation.
Gurdjieff.
And so they suggested this in the theory, and I felt it was too intellectual, and I thought it was too much trying, and I too taken for granted. But they would say, what am I observing? I'm observing anger, and then they would bring up, what is the opposite of anger? And then they would say, what would be the feature of consciousness? But I felt that was
the whole procedure
again, just like any other school or club that could be used on a block, and I said I couldn't do that anymore.
Whatever you think you need.
A personal question is appropriate?
Sure. That's okay. I'll bring this down. Thank you.
This one I call I, November of 88, became ill. I just felt it was wrong. I became very tired. And so I went to a doctor. They named the what it was I had after many of the treatments I had. And they can't do anything. There's not any power about it. They call it chronic fatigue syndrome, Epstein-Barr virus. suggested me try to go to a naturopathic doctor. I feel that I exhaust myself trying to do those things. It came to me that as long as I am seeking health, I will always have illness. When I no longer care that there's a state of health or there's a state of illness, that's the place that I want to be.
You're on the right track.
That there is no future better. And you know what you're to do now. And that's all there is.
Whatever your karma is going to happen, no matter what you do. So what can save yourself?
Do I ignore the body?
See, whatever you're going to do, you'll not be able to stop.
I know, I find that. I write down, I say, why do I allow myself? I observe myself. Look, I went here, I went to this person, I asked this person. What? I see what I'm doing. Why do I allow it? When I can be here in this peaceful state, sitting in my rocker, looking out even at the trees or whatever, and yet I do that. But each time I do it, I feel like I'm learning a little bit.
The way to see it is like this. Let your body do whatever it has to do. Do not think about it too much. Do not identify with it. Do not attach yourself to it. Everything was preordained before you came into existence.
But still there has to be a rational process.
It'll take care of itself. The apples grow, the grass grows, the sun shines. There's warmth to make human life exist. There's a power that takes care of everything. It has nothing to do with our thoughts.
Okay, well let me throw this back at you. I mean, I know you made a move recently. You moved your apartment.
Mm.
You didn't tell me this. I think this lady told me this. I mean, and she was saying that you moved into a better apartment, and there were various advantages. I mean, obviously. Cognizant thinking went into this. You just didn't think. You just didn't decide one day to move into an apartment. So?
On the contrary.
Okay.
It just happened.
You didn't think about it?
No. It became available. And I just did.
But wouldn't be a intelligence and just find out the needs of the body and supply those needs and then forget it.
If that's your karma, I'll give you an example. At one of my experiences in India, I was with a yogi called Neem Karoli Baba. And one day a bunch of us, and one of the people there was Ram Dass, here in Ram Dass. He was there too. We were sitting in front of him when an old lady came up to him and spoke in Hindi, whatever language they were talking, I forgot. And what she said was that her husband was dying. Would he please come and save him? Because only he can come and save him. And then Karoli Baba looked at me and he said, should I go? And I said, yes, go, let's all go. So we walked about 2 miles to a little shack. And the husband was lying on the cot dying of some kind of disease. And he looked at him. And all of a sudden the candles began to flicker. So he turned around and ran out the house. I started to run back to the ashram. And we all followed him. And we said, when he finally stopped, we said, Baba, what happened? Why did you leave? And he said, God wants him to die. And he died. The point is this. your life, your health or your sickness, your riches or your poverty, has all been preordained by the law of karma. And whatever you're going to go through, you're going to go through. If you're supposed to become a health fanatic and watch your health and eat the right things all the time, you will do that. If you're not supposed to, you won't. If you're supposed to take the middle path, you will do that. Everything is ordained, planned before time. The only freedom we've got is to not identify with the process, even though your body's going through it. Do not attach yourself to what your body's going through. Keep your mind above it. Keep your head in heaven and your feet on the ground. So we have no choice in the matter. Whatever is going to happen will happen. So if we have to do all kinds of things, and we find ourselves running from one doctor to another doctor and so forth, do not attach yourself to that. But do it anyway, because you can't help it.
To try to clarify this a little more, you've just been speaking of karma. And yet I know that you believe that karma does not exist. Would you comment on that? Karma exists and that karma does not exist.
Again, the Buddha said, karma is a taskmaster to the foolish and the servant to the wise. Meaning, if we are in the level mentally of karma, we will suffer and we'll become our taskmaster. Okay. But if we lift our minds away from the condition and we keep our mind in the absolute reality, we will not suffer, no matter what the body is going through. Who suffers? The mind, not the body. The body cannot suffer. The body is merely a lump of flesh and bone and blood. But it's animated by the mind. So the mind suffers and allows the body to suffer. But the body can do nothing by itself. So if the mind is taken away from the body, something else will happen. You'll be free.
What was the line again? What was the line? Karma is a taskmaster for the foolish.
And the servant for the wise. It's a servant because you don't pay any heed.
Control.
Exactly. You observe it, and you do not respond. So it becomes your servant. When you do not respond to karma, then you overcome it. In other words, if somebody becomes angry at you, and you do not respond, there's no karma. Nothing fine. Or karma, again, is like a person who talks to you and talks to you and talks to you, but you say nothing. What does that person do? They'll get up and leave. So when your karma sees that you're not paying any attention to it, it dissipates and returns to the nothingness once it came. Let's play some music. Why don't you put the fan on while we're here? To show you that there is a power that knows how to take care of all things if you trust it. That power, of course, is you, but you don't know it. I've been trying to get a hold of a certain picture of Ramana Maharshi for quite a while. Well, first I should tell you that when I was 17, I was led in mysterious ways to a Renicello, where I met Romano. I won't elaborate on that right now, but there was mysterious circumstances that caused that. So going back to now, I try to get a picture of Ramana Maharshi that I like. And sure enough, last week George brings me the same picture as a present in color that I've been looking for a long time. So I took it home and hung it on the wall. In the meanwhile, I had a visitor from Hawaii who used to be one of my students who came to see me, was traveling through. And he brought a lei and put it around my neck. So I took off the lei and put it around my mother's picture. And he said to me, after being on this path for so-called 10 years, and he said, "I didn't know you worship gurus." Now, he should have known better. So I explained to him the facts. Ramana is not a guru. He is the same as myself. I am simply paying homage to myself. There is only one self, and we are all that. So when I honor him with a lay, I'm doing it to me, because he is none other than myself, and you are none other than myself also. So it's not guru worship, it's bowing to yourself, praying to yourself, worshiping yourself, because God dwells in you as you. But this just goes to show you that there is a power that knows how to take care of you, that loves you, that is always on your side. It only requires one thing: surrender. Surrender to yourself. God, Guru, and Self are one. Bow down to yourself. Love yourself. When I speak of yourself, I'm not referring to your ego self. There's something about you that perhaps you're not aware of yet. The absolute reality we've been talking about. That is you. That's what you worship. That's what you bow down to. That's what you express. Never defile yourself by hating yourself. Never believe there's any mistake you've made that's going to rise up against you. Everyone has made mistakes. Forget it. Begin to realize who you are. Begin to love yourself dearly. Have mercy on yourself. Lift yourself up and become free. Any questions about that?
I know that you think that it's a mistake to take these words literally, as you've said many times. You speak of the oneself as being pure intelligence, and then you speak of its great love. And so it's so hard to realize that this thing is beyond these words, which we can't help at our level, in associating with a more tangible identity.
Yes.
Those words, pure intelligence, what do we think about? Naturally, we think about the workings of the mind.
Human intelligence.
Yeah.
Of course. That's why I say, if I say anything at all, if I speak, listen with your heart, not with your head. Get your head out of the way. to not try to analyze. Because you can only analyze with your own concepts. Rather than let it happen, let it be. Become open. And then things begin to happen.
One other thing that went through my mind, this is a different way entirely, but which indicates that the Greek teachings are the same as yours. I've read that over the entrance to the Greek mysteries, which is where it's written, know thyself, which is really your teaching.
Well, this teaching is neither Greek, nor Hebrew, nor Christian, nor Hindu. It's just an universal message of the truth. That's as ancient as the hills. It's nothing new. Only it works. Something happens to lift us above the mundane and into freedom. And you will know when it happens. Because you'll have a feeling of immortality, a feeling of spaciousness. Right now you feel bound to a body. When you become free, your body will no longer hinder you, even though you may appear to still have it. You'll feel omnipresence. The whole universe will be you. You'll be in bliss all the time. But you will still appear as an ordinary person to most people. Because isn't that temporary? And then the condition comes back again at a different time. It's like using drugs to get high. They make you feel good for a while. Then when you come down, you feel worse. Anything that's temporary is an illusion. A better way is to ask yourself, to whom does this depression come? And wait and see. If the running has helped you feel better, but you can use it for a while, yes, question yourself. There are better ways to ask yourself, who is depressed? See, yourself can never be depressed. Your ego is depressed, it's playing games with you. And in reality, there's no ego. So there's nothing to be depressed. You're free.
It never really answers anything about the question that I ask. It may refer to it as it'll say, I know no such thing as depression.
It's your mind playing with you. and spend days with him. But if it makes you feel good for a while, continue.
It's giving me some insight.
So continue for a while. It will not make you free. At least it will give you spurts of happiness. So if you have to continue that, do it. But the better way is to ask you yourself, to whom comes this depression? And realize there's no place for it to come. There's nobody home to be depressed. Your real self can never be depressed. It's free. And happy. We have to do whatever we have to do in the beginning. For instance, sometimes you have a depression. You can't get rid of it no matter what you do. So a good way to help you is to take a cold shower. If you take a nice cold shower, it will change the molecular structure of your body. You'll feel better. Or put ice in the back of your neck. Oh, it's a mind game. It relieves it for a moment, a while. But tomorrow you may be depressed again. Until you get rid of the entire concept of depression.
That way, as it becomes less intense, then it's easier for the mind to become detached from it.
Yes.
If you're constantly dwelling on it, you're not doing anything about it.
Turn your mind away completely.
Sometimes. Even I know for a while I was doing gardening.
Whatever you have to do. And when you do feel better, work on yourself and practice self-inquiry. It's the fastest way.
So the mind is creating its own depression.
Yes, it is.
Trying to get out of it.
Yes, it is.
So if we just realize that, we'll stop creating the depression.
And yes.
Create, if you want to be happy, just be happy instead of creating depression.
True.
But not figure out why it's there.
No.
I wonder why, but what caused? Yeah. Did I eat something? Did they do
that? You'll be doing that forever. That's just like a person who has a tumor. Instead of finding the cause, he makes the doctor cut it out. So it goes back on this side. Then he cuts it out this side, it goes back on his leg. It never stops. But if he went for the cause, why did he have the tumor? He might find a cure. So it's the same thing. Do not look at the effect. But go to yourself. Because the self is always free. No. Just ask, to whom does it come? And you'll realize it comes to no one. No one is depressed. It's part of the dream.
Good couldn't find the time to do it, but at midnight I went to some place to make a lunch. And I was busy for almost 1 week. The second week I finally find bread for it. And that's what, when I brought it to you. I don't know why I did it or how I did it. I just have to do it.
It's interesting.
I wanted to offer you the picture. That was basically it.
And about 3 months ago, I saw the same picture somewhere. I can't remember where I saw it. Somebody showed it to me. And I said to myself, I haven't seen this picture before. I'd really like to get a picture like that. And you presented it. It's funny how things work.
It's not the picture that's
on
the
front of the book. No. It was about 48 years old. This picture.